This presentation of Basic ABA was created by Milestones Autism Organization, a nonprofit organization dedicated to train parents and professionals of best practice approaches to working with children on the autism spectrum. If you'd like to find out more information about Milestones or find autism resources, go to www.milestones.org. My name is Kirsten Johnson. My information is available also at milestones.org. You are now at part four. We'll be discussing what is prompting. So what is prompting? It is the presentation of a stimulus to help the child produce the targeted response after an instruction. So it's basically helping a child be able to respond correctly. As an example, I'm going to talk to you about how we in the real world prompt a child to say thank you to grandma for giving a present. We already know that little Johnny does not know how to say thank you when someone gives him a gift. So this is something we're working on. And so grandma may come to the house and we say, Johnny, you need to say thank you to grandma when she gives him a gift. And he says, thank you, grandma. Thank you for giving me the present. And then gets reinforced by getting the present. Then maybe a week goes by, grandma comes again, and we may this time to say, what do we say, Johnny, to grandma? And then that would be a prompt, and he would say, oh, thank you, grandma. Thank you for the present. And then maybe a third time, grandma comes, and we're trying to slowly fade back our prompt in order for the child to be able to be independent without us reminding them to say thank you. And so grandma comes again, and maybe this time we go, what do we say? Or maybe we give them a nudge or the look of what is the signaling, what is the correct response? What do we need to say when grandma gives us a gift? Now, with a typically developing child, this encounter could go on just a couple times a month. And we would immediately start generalizing it with other people bringing presents, like for birthday parties or for anyone else gives gifts. And at some point, he may forget, and then we try to go back to the least amount of prompting you would need to get that desired response from him. So maybe it's been a year and nobody's given him a gift. So we may go back to, what do we say to grandma? Just because he may not remember. So with the child who's on the autism spectrum, you're going to have more repetition because grandma's not coming frequently enough. So you may want to role play it. You use the same type of prompting, but you're going to have more opportunities to practice it. So there are five different prompts that we use. The first one we'll talk about is a verbal prompt, and that is exactly what we just used in that example with grandma. So you gave a full verbal prompt. You said to him, we say thank you to grandma, or what do we say to grandma? It can be shortened to just what do we say, or maybe even making the sound wah. If you wanted the child to say cookie and you just say the k sound, that would be a verbal prompt. Second one is physical prompting. This is when you're touching the child, such as maybe hand over hand or physically directing him to the correct answer or response. So if he said, go get the ball, and you would go from behind the child over, hand over hand, have him pick it up, and then bring it back over to the desired location. And the third one is modeling, and that's actually acting out the desired response to prompt them. So if you want them to do the hokey pokey, that you're standing in front of them and doing the hokey pokey to show them the desired response. And then maybe, you know, you'd fade back and you would play the music and not do all the motions. And hopefully after seeing you model it, that they'll start to do it more independently. The fourth prompt is gestural prompting. It's pointing to, looking at, moving, or touching the correct response. And so if you asked a child, which one is the red car? And you would point to the red car, that would be a prompt to give them the correct answer. Sometimes we don't realize we're giving a gestural prompt because we will look at the correct answer. Children are smart. They can pick up on that. Or if they start to go touch the right one and you go to correct them, they may see that movement and then pick the other one. You may also ask, what's next on the schedule? and then point to the place on the schedule they're supposed to be looking. And that again would be a prompt, a gestural prompt. The last prompt we don't use very often, it's called a positional prompt, and it's placing the object you want selected closer to the child. So if you were working on the colors red and blue, you would put the color red closer and blue farther away. And then as they get better, you would start to put them next to each other. So you'd slowly bring them closer together. So prompting ensures errorless learning. You want to prompt right away when teaching a new skill, especially if you already know the child doesn't know it. Again, the whole idea that you want your child to practice in their head the correct response over and over again, whether you're prompting, even if you're prompting them and you're making it successful so their brain remembers it that way. Then the next time you ask him the same question, you want to give him an opportunity to show you the correct response. But if the child even starts to go for the incorrect response, you may want to interrupt that and help them get the correct response right away. So for example, if you ask your child to put all of the red blocks in, and then they would go reach for the car to put in the bucket, you would interrupt that and hand over hand help them pick up another block and to continue helping them put it in without stopping and having to do a correction. So the key to errorless learning is repetition. Repetition of the correct response. It's going to take multiple discrete trials using prompting in order for the child to be able to do it independently. Sometimes as soon as the child realizes what you're asking, when they understand the response of do this or point to, then they actually are able to learn a lot faster because they know what you want. You just have to be careful that the child doesn't become prompt dependent. And that means that if you're constantly giving them verbal prompts of what to say, then after a while they're just going to wait for you to say it. So you have to remember to pause and give them the opportunity and try to use less of a verbal by making just the sound or part of the word instead of giving them the whole sentence. Or if it's a full physical prompt that you're giving that maybe you're just starting to raise your arms to go to touch them, and that may be a prompt enough. So remember, we call it fading. Try to fade back and not give them so much of a prompt. That will help them become independent and shape that behavior. Okay, let's do an ASR question. The question is, what type of prompt would you use to teach fishing? A, physical, B, verbal, or C, modeling? This is actually a trick question. It could be A or C. There probably aren't very many opportunities that you would need to use verbal prompting, but you would definitely could use both physical and modeling. And I'll talk to you about how. Fishing is a very difficult skill to teach. And there's lots and lots of different components to fishing, so you have to break it down in teachable steps. And you're not going to teach all of them the first time you go. And in fact, with a child with autism, you're going to probably, before you even go to the lake, teach some of the skills at home. But if you have a typical child and you go to the pond to go fishing, you're going to break it down to, you know, you're going to put the worm on the hook, and there's the casting it out or getting the line out into the water. There's waiting for the tug. When they get the tug, you know, reeling it in and pulling in the line. Okay. And so let's think about some of the prompts you might use. You may use modeling because you might stand there and show them how to push the button when you're going to cast, put it over your shoulder, and then toss it out. All right, it's a very hard concept, so you may actually use a physical prompt and put your hand over hand on their finger and put it onto the fishing pole and over their shoulder. So you may actually be physically helping them. When they are reeling it in, you may point to remind them, oh, here we go. You're going to have to start reeling in and pointing or gesturing where it is that would take place. You may be pointing where the bobber is to help them keep focused on whether it's going under. Oh, look, it's going under, and pointing to the visual so they can see. We use many different prompts and a lot of high reinforcement for teaching fishing because it's so difficult. And really the only reinforcement that's embedded is getting a fish. And there's not a whole lot of opportunities of that to happen. We just stood there and we were always yelling at them and telling them they're not doing a good job and you forgot to do this or why aren't you pulling it in? They're not going to want to go fishing again. I guarantee you, it's not going to increase their likelihood. All right, it's not going to reinforce them. Okay, so a child who is on the spectrum then, and you want to teach them to fish, we would do a task analysis, which the first thing we would do is break it down into small teachable steps. So we're probably not going to teach them to put a worm on first, but we may teach them how to cast it. We may teach them how to reel it in, because those are things that are a little more physical and maybe a little easier for them to do. And so we might want to teach it before we even go to the pond by just taking a weight or something to put on the end of a line and doing it in the backyard, just over and over and over again, prompting them, reinforcing them, maybe putting something fun that they really like on the end of it as a treat. You know, put something fun that's, you know, rewarding so that when they pull it in, I mean, maybe you're just teaching how to pull it in, right? Because when we teach children, we don't make them do it all when they go fishing. Sometimes they just pull it in, and even then we're sometimes helping them. But in their head, they just went fishing. Okay, I hate to bring up data because I know it sounds unrealistic, but this is where that kind of information can really be helpful. Because if you're trying to teach your child a specific skill, you're going to want to know how much prompting and what kind of prompting you had given them so that the next time you work with them, you know where to start at. For example, if you ask your child, point to the giraffe, and you had to give a full physical prompt and hand over hand help them point to the giraffe, and then you continue to work with them, and by the end of that day, all you have to do is actually do a gestural prompt and point to the giraffe to get them to point to the giraffe, then you know the next time you work with them, you don't need to do a full physical prompt. Okay, now for the last ARSR question for the section. You guys are doing great. Okay. When demonstrating airless learning, the prompt should come A, before lunch, B, before an incorrect response, or C, after the incorrect response. And the answer is B. You want it to come before an incorrect response. So with airless learning, if you think the child is going to have an incorrect response, you want to interrupt it, prompt them with the correct response, and then reinforce. Then go back to the direction again and see if you can get an unprompted response the second time. But if not, you want to continue prompting them until they're able to get the response without it. If they're still having a problem, you may want to look at the SD and the reinforcement, make sure those are okay. Reinforcement and prompting are the most important components to teaching your child a desired skill. You need to continue making learning a positive experience. I know that your whole day is not going to be a positive experience. And I know that's not realistic. But if there's a specific skill you want to work on, try to make sure that when you're doing it during a time when your child is not tired, they've eaten something, and that you know that it will probably end on a positive note and be successful. Okay, and don't be scared to make errors. If something doesn't go well, that's okay. You learn from it. I love to videotape myself when I'm working with a child because I don't realize half the things I'm doing. And you listen to it and you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe how many times I requested them to do something and I didn't follow through. How often I just say, good job, and I don't have any other reinforcement other than that, and that can't possibly be very reinforcing anymore to them. Remember to teach things in small steps. Don't try to do it all in one day or one week. And modify the environment for your child to be successful, and then you want to fade it. Okay, great. So this is the end of part 4, and the next part is going to be about task analysis and chaining. All right, I'll see you then.